Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm Mike Yam.
And I'm Aditi Kinkabwala. We love football so much, we figured let's start a podcast and call it NFL Explained, where we just answer all the crazy questions we get about football all the time.
There are a ton of those questions, Aditi. We can go through team names, like how the Buffalo Bills got their name, or who even came up with the Sky Camp, because that is actually a really cool idea.
Answers to questions like that and more every Thursday. Come join us for the NFL Explained podcast.
You can find it on the iHeartRadio app or on Apple Podcasts, basically wherever you find your podcasts.
Don't miss out on the top stories from the best insiders around the NFL. I'm your host, Rhett Lewis, and on the NFL Inside Report podcast, I'll go around the league for in-depth analysis and storytelling with a multitude of exclusive NFL insiders getting unmatched access. Game recaps, the biggest news, and in-depth storytelling that take you beyond the headlines multiple times per week, all on the NFL Inside Report podcast. Listen to NFL Inside Report on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Around the NFL podcast is vaxxed, waxed, and ready for action.
Gross. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name's Dan Hansis. Come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. Week one in the books. Week two right around the corner. And I really, truly enjoyed how the first week of the season ended in that madhouse in Vegas, that new facility. Well, it was and I feel for all the fans in Oakland who lost their team. But if you're Mark Davis in your beautiful white-on-white Miami Vice suit, chilling next to Charles Woodson, you're looking around and you're like, oh, I kind of nailed this. I hope my dad is watching down and seeing this, because I just set this organization up from a value standpoint and just a general vibe. Like, the Raiders are a vibe now. And that was a fun game to enjoy. The monoculture is dead, Mark, but the communal experience of watching a great primetime game like last night, that's just fun. And everybody gets to share it together in the moment.
Yeah, I'll just say what I tweeted out, because it was the true feeling I felt about the game, that I thought that the game was essentially like the Symbionese Liberation Army of the 1970s. And I was the game's Patty Hearst, the kidnapped victim who started off a little bit suspicious about being kidnapped by the experience, but then became more wedded to it, and then a supporter of it eventually. I mean, things changed a little later on, but it won me over. I mean, it was a bit of a sloppy, messy affair out of the gate, but it turned into sort of a classic, and it had a lot to do with the television experience, which was not the normal ESPN one for me, and we can get into that later.
Well, so you liken it to...
Well, let's not save that. I mean, I've never heard you so excited about a television broadcast as the Manning brothers. Let's hear it.
Well, I will... Well, you know, Dan...
Well, you knew it was going to go either one of two ways with Sessler. He was either going to be as angry as anyone's ever been about anything about Peyton and Eli, or he was going to love it more than anyone else. And quite frankly, I'm a little surprised where it went. Mark was all in on the whole thing. And I do like, Mark, that you did equate the beginning of the game, and which is kind of an assignment for us, to being the victim of a felony crime. Like, you had to watch this football game, but apparently by the end of it, it was a treat for you.
It was. And I mean, just to hit on the Manning brothers thing, I've more things in life to not, hold up all my past pretenses and I guess, you know, ideas about the Mannings or something like this. I just wanted to see what they had to say. And I didn't click in until about 20 minutes in. And that's where everyone said that the first 20 minutes were clunky. From there, I have to tell you something, that I think that the typical play-by-play man in like a tight necktie around his white shirt and his little sports coat and like throwing it left and right to one athlete in the booth is over. I know it won't be, because
manufactured joke.
Networks will run about 30 years after everyone else realizes things are over, so it's going to go on and on. But I'm telling you right now, what I saw last night made me simply enjoy the game more, and I learned five times more than I have in watching any football game. Because just the Manning sitting there talking shop with, first it was Charles Barkley. He's not bringing the football knowledge, but he was hilarious. But you got Travis Kelce, all right? You've got Ray Rice, who I've always found hyper annoying, they actually, in a more relaxed setting, got a lot out of him. And then it was Russell Wilson, who was meant to be studying film, but he said, I'm going to stick with you guys all the way through this overtime because I'm learning by listening to you and you're learning from me. And like, they're dropping mad bombs. They're making fun of Eli. There was a lot of humor. And it just, to me, felt like a television experience made for 2021, where half the time people are watching, you know, a girl in a swimming pool on Twitch. I don't know. There's all sorts of things that people are doing instead of watching normal broadcast television right now. And this was right up that alley. So for me, like, you know what? I thought of Wes a little bit because Wes was someone who was quite annoyed with the Monday Night Football announcing teams of the past couple of years. And I think he would have enjoyed this experience in a very different way.
Although he is famously annoyed with Peyton Manning, you know,
in his speaking. Produced commercial like ads where he is holding like a sandwich, not in this,
trying to be funny and right. and stuff. No, I'm totally intrigued by Mark's fascination with this, and I love it. It's a great subplot.
Mark, are you one of those people that watch women in swimsuits in a pool?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Well, that was not the current me, but I have Twitch on my iPad and rarely check it out. But there, you know, little girls will do, and guys, all sorts of people. That will take you out to dinner in like Korea for 2 hours and just show you what it's like. So I learned from it. There are human experiences there.
That's Absolutely. A great call, by the way, Dan, on Mark Davis. We really, who would have thought? What an upset. Like, it all worked out perfect. Partly because the NFL rejected his and the Chargers' plan to build a stadium in L.A. That they were, like, there was three different plans that were proposed, and the Raiders' plans were always number three, and they were left out in the cold. And it worked out much,
and you know what?
Much more I don't, beautifully.
I don't take that away from Mark Davis either, because all, you know, my life, your lives, filled with near mistakes that the fate stepped in and said, no, you're not going to do this. This is how it's actually going to work out. But as long as you have some type of vision, which Davis did, and if you follow the league, and we got to be a little bit careful here because the owners, including Mark Davis, own us, essentially. But if you do some research on where Mark Davis was as a person in the spotlight within the organization about 10, 12 years ago, maybe check out an old Mike Silver Yahoo column if you want. And to where he is now, the Raiders are on the rise in that Cowboys kind of way, where they are kind of a brand, a global brand, and now the business side of things is catching up to the branding, and it's a good thing. Now they just got to build a good team. Right now it might be a fun team. Don't know about a good team. We're going to get to that game in a second. We're also going to preview Thursday Night Football with the Tiny Box, who's going to join us at the end of the show. And then we're going to have our kind of post-mortem of week one with a segment loosely titled, you know, this is a working title. How do you feel now? Or how do you like them apples? No. How do you feel now? How about now?
That works.
Where we just kind of cycle through some teams after week one, and have our thoughts changed? Do we have a different position based on just four quarters of play? But yes, before that, and we'll have a special guest connected to that conversation. But before that, Monday Night Football recap.
Now Carr is running back on the field, and the field goal unit is coming off.
What in the world is going on out here?
They want to get closer. It's second down and 14.
What else can happen, Kevin?
I don't know. Let's see. Carr's going to get the shotgun snap. They blitz from the side. It's picked up. He throws an arching pass down the side. It's caught at the five. Touchdown, Zay Jones. The Raiders have won on a touchdown pass of 31 yards.
This game was so dumb, but we all had fun. Sports is the last communal experience. Kevin Harlan with Kurt Warner, Westwood One. Great call. Wouldn't expect anything less. Derek Carr, after a Benny Hill-style mangling of the sport by John Gruden, strategically, sending the kicker on. Kicker gets on late. Get a penalty. Why is the kicker even there? Why are you setting up for like a 45-yard field goal and there's 4 minutes playing overtime? Carr runs back on the field and throws a touchdown. The decisive touchdown for the Raiders, who defeat the Ravens 33-27 in overtime at the new facility in Las Vegas, Allegiant Stadium. Greg, wild back and forth game. It was a weird feeling in the air, and certainly a weird game played out.
Yeah, Derek Carr put it well in his post game, interview with ESPN, with a little bit of like wrestling flair to it. I like this Derek Carr, and also with a intelligent step back in terms of the look at his own career, that the game was like his career. That's these huge swings.
That's interesting.
Like the first quarter, he couldn't, hit the side of a barn. He was playing terrible. Even in the overtime, that throw to Willie Snead, Snead probably should make that play, but it's coming out too hot. You throw an interception on the goal line, and if the Ravens go down and score, you're the GOAT. But in the end, like, Carr was on fire, basically, from about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter through the end of overtime, starting with that long Henry Ruggs throw, to the game winner, and especially the 37-second field goal drive with two nails throws to Bryan Edwards. To me, those were the plays of the game to set up that game tying field goal to go to overtime. It's hard to do, getting a field goal, without timeouts or with 37 seconds or left. Doesn't happen very often. The last three times it's happened, the Raiders have been involved. It was that win over the Jets last year. It was the loss to the Dolphins that basically ended the Raiders season a year ago with Fitzmagic, and then it was this one. So I give him a ton of credit for playing his best when it really mattered and getting a win that you feel like they almost needed, with the Ravens coming in a little banged up and the rest of the AFC West, winning that game. I think it was a big win to start off the Raiders season.
Well, I remember when I was at their last game in Oakland and they tripped up in a game they should have won against the Jaguars and collapsed down the stretch and left that Oakland fan base so beside itself. A quiet riot began and then it was quelled, but you had to win this game if you're the Raiders. You're opening the stadium for your fans. Forget last season. You mentioned Mark Davis, who never even went there last year, because out of respect for the fans. So it really concerned me when they did their very Raiders-esque thing and looked like they kept wanting to give the game away. I mean, the tipped interception by Carr in the end zone, which should never have happened, was outrageous. But when you get Lamar Jackson to fumble twice the way he did, the first one led to a Raiders touchdown. The second one, we know what happened there. I mean, these were key mistakes by a Ravens quarterback who in the past has been tracked by ugly fumbles that have been costly in playoff games. So I think that's a lasting issue for the Ravens. I don't come out of the game thinking that differently about the Raiders, though. I think a lot of people do. I still see them as a sort of a circus ride that's going to have high highs and disappointing lows, sort of a mirror image of their quarterback. I think, I don't like when you guys point out necessarily things that I text you during the game without checking with me first, which you never do. But Dan and I were having a bit of a back and forth about Carr, where I basically said, look, if Baker Mayfield had had Derek Carr.
Well, you tweeted it too.
I did later because I thought, I know what's going to happen. I'm going to tweet this and then he's going to win the game, Carr, and I'm going to have to deal with a bunch of jabronis, and I deserve it. But I tweeted it.
Take a trip inside Mark's mind.
It's unrewarding to tweet that kind of thing if it goes south. But his first half was a mess, and it left you thinking this is just the same Raiders team from a year ago. But Dan kept saying, I think Derek Carr is a bit of a quasi-badass. And then a huge mistake would happen, and you'd be like, not a quasi-badass, but then 2 minutes later, a quasi-badass. And in the end, that's what he was. And I give it totally to Carr last night. I thought his post-game interview showed a lot about why he's a wonderful teammate, too. And it was a huge night for the Raiders. I don't know if it means they're still anything but an 8 or 9 or 9 or 8 team. There are signs that maybe they are. But I came out of it thinking that was one of the better Monday Night Football experiences I'd had as an adult.
It was a great fan experience, and if you're in that building, that will go down as one of the great kind of Raiders nights in a long time. Yeah, I think Carr is like a quasi stud. Like, he's not really, but in those money moments, and yes, he threw the pick there. But I don't know if that was even his fault. Put a little mustard on it, but he does step up. You could tell he's a quarterback that his skills aren't at the level of a Mahomes or maybe even not even at the level of a Mayfield. But I just think he's got a lot of moxie, and I think he's a good fit for that organization, even if it seems John Gruden's never quite satisfied. And I'm also with you, Mark, on, I didn't come out of this game. We're going to talk about what changed our feelings in week one. I feel the same about the Raiders. I think they're kind of like a they're like a big dumb, they're like a big golden retriever of football teams. They're sweet and dumb, and they run around a lot and run into walls, and like they're just fun to play with. But they're also like the city that they play in. They're kind of a beautiful mess. And so I think there's a ceiling to a Raiders team. The Ravens, it's just it's a tough beat there. We talked about it going into that game. That just seemed like a tough spot for them. In prime time, first game in Vegas, that stadium going bonkers with the injuries that they dealt with going into week one. I still think they're going to be okay. I did the power rankings on Tuesday, and I have them still in the top 10. But they do have to clean up two things. The offensive line's got to be a lot better, because a Raiders front that isn't known for terrorizing quarterbacks had no problem getting to Lamar. And Greg Jackson's got to take care of the football better. He said after the game, hey, that's football. Fumbles happen. It's like, yeah, it does. But if you want to take the next step, if you want the Ravens to take the next step, you have to eliminate mistakes like that, because that last fumble essentially sealed their fate.
I came out of this game feeling a little different about both teams, just that they look different. The first fumble is totally on Lamar. The second one, I don't think is on Lamar. I mean, Carl Nassib doesn't get blocked by, you know, your new running back. First of all, the offensive line makes the wrong, you know, setup for the protection, just lets him run in a defensive end. And then your running back, who, you know, just got elevated to the starting lineup, Tyson Williams, that makes no effort, and he gets hit in the blind side in under 2.5 seconds. You know, you would love him to hold on to the ball there, but being aware that quickly, that's on the offensive line, that's a protection. But that kind of gets to what I'm talking about. They couldn't pick up short yardage. The two sequences in the game that mattered the most to me were the end of the first half, where they have a short yardage situation and they can't pick it up, just running straight like Ravens power or read action type action, and they give time to the Raiders to go down the field and put some points. Then at the end of the game, same situation. You're going in for the game-winning field goal. All you got to do is pick up a short yardage situation. It's 2nd and 8, 3rd and 4. I mean, it's not like it's too short, but they couldn't just run the ball. And that's where I think the Ravens teams of old might be a little different, and they'll get better as the season gets on, but he doesn't have the same chemistry in terms of doing some of those read actions. They didn't run a lot of pistol. I think that was by design. It was a lot more spread offense, 4 or 5 wide receivers. And then more than anything, Ronnie Stanley was terrible. He's an all-pro left tackle coming off an excruciatingly huge injury. So of all the things that you talked about with the Ravens coming into the season, Ronnie Stanley was probably last on your list. He got destroyed all night. I mean, and he's an all-pro, and maybe it's just coming off of, you know, the ACL, and he'll be fine week 5, 6, or 7. But if Ronnie Stanley and Villanueva are both getting smoked all game, then what do we have here? We have a lot of deficiencies that maybe the organization can't, and Lamar can't totally make up for.
To your 2 points, Greg, they were 3 for 12 on third down. That's atypical for the Ravens. And Stanley, who has allowed 16 pressures over the last 2 seasons, last night allowed 9, according to PFF.
That's what I'm talking about. That, to me, was the
bad night.
Oh, no. And Raiders look pretty good defensively. They look better. At least they look like
that is something. A change you could point to, because that was obviously their chaotic undoing a year ago.
And it should be pointed out, the Ravens had a 14-0 lead in this game. They lost the game. It was the first time a John Harbaugh Ravens team has ever blown a 14-point lead. They were, I believe, 81.
That's telling too about the running game.
81-0.
And I feel like the Jets blew 3 14-point leads last season. Final point for me on the Raiders side of the ball, Alex Leatherwood, their first-round pick, did not look good. He struggled with penalties and did not play well, I didn't think. Darren Waller, after the game, after a game in which he was targeted 19 times, which is a little bit excessive, but still, you get it when John Gruden steps up at the lectern after the game and calls him the best player I've ever coached. And go check out John Gruden's football reference page. He's coached a lot of Hall of Fame players. And last thing, Cleveland Farrell. We talk about first-round picks like Alex Leatherwood. Cleveland Farrell, a healthy scratch in week one. Max Crosby is kind of saving that draft class by being a stud. He was picked in the 4th round, I believe, of that same draft. But Cleveland Farrell, a healthy scratch in year 3. I believe the number 4 overall pick a few years back.
Mayock's feeling the heat. He sort of put it out there that I know how this is, And if we don't win games, I'm going to be back with Rich Eisen next year.
It's more
which
like
is a little presumptuous, you know. Maybe you know, pushing DJ to the side a little bit.
Sounds more like Cleland farewell if he doesn't start to operate.
Nailed it. I do because Mike, you know, DJ, you know, move the sticks. I call him the you know smiling assassin because he's this you know good natured preacher's son, and then he'll just cut you to ribbons. He'll just rip you up. He'll rip your heart out via social media and whatever else. So what I'm telling you is he's got a little Black Mamba in him, even if he's got this smiling preacher's son surface. And Mayock should be aware of that. He's not going to just walk in because DJ will fight back. It's just something to track. I'm getting right. ahead of the story, obviously.
Yeah, we're way ahead.
If no, you're not ahead at all. You're right. It's more, very current.
If you can win nine more games, then Mayock... Won't have to worry about these things.
Let's right. cut that for social. I honestly would like to, and just to see what the fallout is on multiple fronts.
I know it is. We really have gotten used to saying whatever it is we want. Like, imagine if this got back to Mike Mayock, he'd be like, "Those fucking guys? Are you kidding me?"
Well, he probably only knows one of us, and that's you, Greg. I don't think he has any concept who Dan and I are.
I sleep well at night and feel good that this podcast is a safe space for us to share
too.
Unvarnished views. On our league. All right, let's move on. How do you feel now?
One I like the how about now the second time, you know, when you said it, when you go, how do you feel about now?
How about now?
How about now? That's what makes it, I think. That's what makes the title right there. The second how about now.
Not, we don't really like how you like them apples.
No, that's tired.
It's been done. It's been
done. It's, right. It's over. Great line, but.
Right.
Not your line, though. You know,
it's not.
Someone owns it.
That's a Damon special.
How do you like their map?
All right. Let's get to it. I'm going to throw out some teams, good and bad, in terms of results in week one, and I'll just see where you guys stand on them. Do you feel better, worse, the same? Did it change fundamentally what you thought about this team leading up to the season? And let's start with the team that's number five in the power rankings, up five spots, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, of course, went to Buffalo and delivered a classic Pittsburgh Steelers-type performance. Mark, I'll start with you on this one because you are very heavily embedded in the AFC North. I think I kind of know your answer, but are you completely sold now on all that high floor, low ceiling, low basement type thing? High ceiling, low floor situation with the Steelers. Is this just another Steelers team that's going to win 10 or 12 games to you now?
Well, I'd say this. If we find out that over the next couple of weeks that the Bills offense is what they were last year, then it only raises what I think about Pittsburgh, and especially as a defensive team that can hang around all year long. I think that like the concerns were never the front of the defense. I mean, TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, unleashed total chaos against Buffalo. Buffalo was, you know, they didn't use play action as much as they did in years past, especially last year. They were a little bit out of sorts, but I think Pittsburgh put them in a very uncomfortable place. And I could see them doing that to the Ravens, to the Browns, to the Bengals in their own division and beyond the division. So I feel strongly about Pittsburgh on that front. I haven't changed my mind. The offense, though, also didn't entirely change my mind. Big Ben warmed up as the game went along. But if you go look at their ground attack, it was still stuck in the mud. Najee Harris played every single snap and came out with numbers that looked nothing like he did. I mean, we just didn't see that version of it. I know they have weapons and they made a couple big plays down the stretch, but I still need to see more from the offense because you can't just do it with defense. So I don't feel that differently about the Steelers because I think going into the year, I said, this is probably a wild card team inside a really tough division that'll win 10 games and then we'll see what happens from there.
You felt different back in April and May. That's for
I
sure.
did, but I was riding on like a psilocybin high from a first playoff game my team had been in since I was in middle school. So,
yeah, I remember one of the early podcasts or mid off season podcasts was like the early over under ones, and I thought the Steelers over 8.5 was my number one pick overall, just because Mike Tomlin's never had a losing record, and I just don't see any big reason. I don't feel any different about this team. All the questions you had going into week one kind of came true. Not sure about the offensive line, not sure about the running game, not sure about the offense. They had 250 yards. I like the defense, but you know, they had a punt return touchdown right in this game, and Allen missed two wide open deep touchdowns that would have made it look different. It was a good competitive game by like a complete team that's going to be competitive, but that's sort of what I expected from the Steelers. They got to show me more to think they could be more than that.
I'm looking at our prediction page, and I don't see them in the playoffs for you, Mark. And I see also the Steelers getting just one vote from David Carr, Derek's brother, to win the AFC North. So like that's kind of where things were 7 days ago.
Well, hold on. Wait a minute.
Like, he can say they're a wild card team.
I still think they're a wild card type team. That's all. I think they could win 9-10 games and be left out of the mix too. I that doesn't mean because I didn't put them on NFL.com's precious little page that I quietly a week ago thought they were 5-12. Please.
Well, you didn't say Carr was the only type team though. You said wild card team.
All right, but I mean, I didn't. Sunday didn't body rock my feelings about the Steelers.
Like, I'm just here.
Hen pecking notwithstanding.
When you're telling the audience, I saw them as a playoff team entering the season, and then I go to this website and it says you don't see them as a playoff team. You understand the disassociation there. That's all.
Well, I mean, I put predictions out on multiple formats and multiple, you know, so it's, you have to check the other three or four places I predicted their finish.
You're the Joker in Dark Knight. You're just an agent of chaos.
That's the equivalent.
All right, let's move on. Oh, did you share your thoughts? I think you did, Greg.
Yeah.
It was good. Wow. And they were good. I'm going to actually listen back to the show.
They were memorable. It was great.
They were trenchant.
How about the Bills while we're here? I mean, Josh Allen and that offense could not get anything going on. Greg, do you think that is a sign that maybe the NFL caught up to to Brian Daboll's offense, or let it breathe a little bit? They'll be fine.
Let it breathe. The week one teams that have great continuity but maybe didn't perform how they wanted are the ones I'm not worried about. And yet, where I don't want to overreact. Josh Allen struggled against the Steelers more than once. Not just this game, not just last year, before that. They've had a good beat on this Bills offense. They still outgained them by 120. Like, I still go back to that. Allen missed a couple deep throws. You know, if that starts piling up week after week, I'd be concerned, but not concerned whatsoever. And I thought their defense played pretty well for the most part.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about the defense. I'd say on offense, I'll point to again that, like, last year they were the fifth. They use play action as the fifth most team in the NFL to hide, you know, the fact that they're a little run averse. They're not a run heavy team, obviously. Zach Moss strangely like deactivated before the game. They were the fourth least play action heavy team in week one. I think they got a little out of script. You mentioned the misplays by Josh Allen. Like, they play Miami. I'm not sure that's going to be an easy test either. But, like, Brian Daboll's still there.
Week two game.
It is. But I just trust it's all still the same, you know, parts in place.
Yeah, I think sometimes, and this goes across all sports, sometimes there's just a team that you struggle with, that they, for whatever reason, they're a bad matchup for you, and they kind of have you figured out a little bit. And it doesn't mean everyone else then figures you out, but it seems like the Steelers would be a bad draw for the Bills come January, for instance. They just play them very well. How about the Arizona Cardinals? Okay, so we have this NFC West where they were just completely overlooked all summer. And then they drop, to quote a paraphrase, a Sesslerism, an A-bomb in the desert. But it wasn't the desert. It was in the middle of Nashville on the Titans. Should we now view the Cardinals differently, or is this one of those week one games where we'll look back in a month and be like, well, that was kind of stupid?
I view them different. Like, I didn't know what I was getting out of Chandler Jones. Didn't have a great month before he was gone all last season. Now he looks like the best player that's ever been created. Bad job, Bill Belichick. You know, he really could be a Hall of Famer if he like stacks another 20 sack season. It's not a crazy notion.
How about one more 5 sack game? I put
right,
in the Canton.
Do one more. I mean, and then Kyler Murray, and this is where I'm probably overreacting, but my God, the big plays he made in that game, you know, PFF tracks those, you know, big time throws. He led the league in week one. The accuracy, the types of plays no one else could make other than maybe Mahomes. It just got me feeling like, okay, here comes that leap Dan's been talking about. And I think it was a little more gradual than some people thought last year, but it was still good. It was good from year one to year two. But if he's taking another leap, then all bets are off. And this division and this team is nasty because their top-end talent is just so good.
They looked so balanced. I mean, I thought that there were going to be issues on defense in the secondary, especially The total reverse was true. I mean, they held A.J. Brown and Julio Jones to like 90 combined yards. I mean, they were non-factors. You know, Derrick Henry was shut down, which is the way to unplug the Titans. And I look at Murray, and it's like the whole thing. I think, you know, I thought this was the team, the Cardinals, in that division that was going to be, just by force of nature they were dealing with the other three teams, suppressed, held back, and maybe the coach goes after this season. I think they basically, it was sort of an exclamation point to people like me that says, we are not milquetoast. We are exciting, and our quarterback, it begins right there. Kyler Murray's ceiling is completely unknown. We're only like 3/4 up the wall, and I'm very excited about his play.
I thought the Titans, watching that game yesterday, they looked even worse than the final score and the highlights indicated. Derrick Henry, we said, 9 yards on 10 carries. And you had a offense that didn't even have a first down until like well into the second quarter. Is that a team that we have any concerns about?
It was such a bad matchup that I actually am going to give it a... Chandler Jones won that game as aggressively as like any one defensive player can just win a game. He destroyed them. And then Kyle, like Murray's plays felt a little less about Tennessee's defense and more just like there's no defense for some of the plays that he made. Some of the biggest plays in the game were just incredible throws after incredible scramble. So I'm going to give them a little bit of a pass and wait and see.
Here's my concern. Like I'd point to when Kyle Shanahan left the Falcons and you leave an MVP passer and Matt Ryan behind and they never reach those heights ever again. Not the same way. That, you know, Arthur Smith's going to struggle, conversely, in Atlanta now, potentially for a while. But Todd Downing was not a thriller when he was on the Raiders calling plays and working with their offense to some degree. It's just an unknown what that offense will be. And I think we're in a time period now where if you have one of those play callers that's sort of a next level guy, I mean, he completely revived Ryan Tannehill's career and he knew how to use all those parts. So I want to see more because I think... the Cardinals sort of put a roadmap out there on how to stop Tennessee.
What, have Chandler Jones?
Well, it's not just that. I mean, anyone that stopped Derrick Henry in any game, it's been a very successful way to do it. But yeah, having a guy have 5 sacks is also another way to do it, Greg. That's
a really smart... I think that's a savvy way to build a team.
I'm just saying, he destroyed Luan. If Luan is bad now and he's coming off an injury too, it's like, you know, these guys coming off injuries, sometimes they don't come all the way back, then that's a concern. Julio's the guy I want to see, you know, warm up a little. Didn't practice much, right? I'm not, but it was
because you need to keep the faith, buddy. Because you were the one, when they acquired him in the trade, saying everybody is saying that he's not that great anymore. Chill out, go watch the game tape. But I did, you know, he didn't have an impact at all. I'm giving them a little bit of a, I'll give him a mulligan.
I think it's like for Greg, it's a chillax moment.
Total chillax moment for Greg. Classic. Hey, how about the entirety of the NFC East excepting the New York Giants? I think we all feel pretty good about where the Giants are right now, even if the Giants shouldn't feel pretty good about where the Giants are. But I'll start with you, Mark. Any of the teams in the NFC East change how you felt about them?
Not a ton. I mean, I think if anything, arrow up a little bit on Dallas for me, because I think on offense, if they can produce that passing game each week, the way they did, you've got a potential MVP at quarterback in the best wide receiver group in the NFC. I mean, I think they should win that division. Washington looked similar to me, but the rest of them, we'll see.
I mean, I feel a little better about the Eagles. I kind of like.
Oh, you know what? I forgot. I totally forgot about the Eagles.
We'll see. I mean, I think they are a team that's going to be feisty. If you have an offensive line that good, a defensive line that good. Jalen Hurts, I want to see against a non-Falcons defense before I start going too crazy. But if he just limits mistakes, like, he'll be solid enough. Like, he doesn't need to be a top 20 quarterback for them to be a little nasty with the lines that they have.
I would say one thing, though. Sirianni also, I completely forgot the Eagles. Sirianni showed total aggressiveness in that game. I think that's a change for that coaching staff. I kind of like that. I know they used analytics left and right, but last year, none of that was present. And I think they really fit. He found an offense that really fits Hurts very, very well.
So far, so good with the Eagles. Yeah, I think, Greg, your lock of the week, notwithstanding, you had a couple pre-week one takes that checked out. The Eagles actually being more talented, especially on each side of the ball in the trenches. think that was you. Might have been money.
That was me.
It's too much.
Might have been Mark, but that's
no,
okay.
That was just absolutely
filter
me.
It to Greg.
Banging look. That Eagles drum. I'm always banging that Eagles drum.
I check the tapes.
Him to win. I mean, you can check it. NFL.com game picks.
I don't agree. I honestly don't agree with the assessment. I'm not saying Greg didn't say that, but I'm telling you, I did. So
we'll have to take you at your word, but you wouldn't lie.
I would never lie.
It was an NFL.com article.
I would not at work lie about anything, mostly.
You are an honest man. All right. How about the Saints? I mean, weird game. I mean, you cannot take it away from them. 35-3 against the NFC North champion Packers. But I don't know, Greg, a little bit of a snowball type game where everything went right for one side and everything went wrong for the other. And we shouldn't take too much out of it. That was kind of like where I came down on it.
A little bit, because, when you rewatch this game, some of those plays were just crazy. And they've had a rough post week one. So they've got 6 coaches in the COVID protocol. That's a lot. A nutritionist and a player. Hopefully it doesn't spread for them, but maybe even more importantly, just for their wins and losses here. Marshawn Lattimore is going to be out for a little bit with the surgery. Marcus Davenport, maybe their best pass rusher now, is going to be out with an injury. And I'm forgetting another injury off the top of my head. Oh, yeah, Eric McCoy, their starting center, maybe like a Pro Bowl caliber type center, is going to be out for half the season. So they quietly had the worst week of anyone for injuries. I had them as a wild card team. So I'm pleasantly surprised to see them blow the doors off the Packers, but I do think they do have the bones to be competitive all year, maybe make the Bucks work a little, but those injuries concern me.
I think for me, let's just look at the game itself. Absolutely. I think Sean Payton's basically been amped up to do this. I thought that they were going to be proven to be a team mired in too much transition that had kind of like a Patriots season from a year ago to some degree due to depth in various places. But you know what? They kind of just went out there with a DGAF attitude and dropped a huge giant box of knives from the sky on Green Bay. And I mean, I've never seen anything like that in week one in Aaron Rodgers' career, obviously. From that angle, it was marvelous. And I dig the Saints for what they did. After the week they went through, all the nonsense, like, they came out as the team that wanted it so much more. That's the thing. You could just visibly see that they were like, we want this game more than you do.
Knives everywhere, stuck into the turf, into shoulder blades.
Stick just a giant,
blood
huge
and gore
box.
All over
wait,
the field.
Do they take them out of the box before dropping them from the sky, or is it just the box?
No, it's like imagine like out of one of those gigantic secret like aircraft carriers that are like half invisible. It's like the size of eight refrigerator boxes filled with knives that just gets dropped in the middle of like the Saints huddle.
Wow. Is it like
the Packers huddle?
Mickey Loomis
say.
Up there? He's like, ha ha. I'm he claims he had, cap space.
No, he
and
has
then
an
he's just,
alibi.
Like, dropping knives, though.
Wouldn't it be smart for him to have an alibi? He's in the stadium. So I had nothing to do with it. It was a military mistake.
So it's like a Mickey Mouse type thing. Yeah, it's like a drone attack where, like, you know, it's like, oh, good, we'll just send a drone, everything be fine. But the accuracy isn't always the way you need it to be. Just knives
right.
raining down.
And
upon
then we spend
Duval.
3 weeks talking about in the wake of Sunday's drone attack, like.
I mean, if they have depth issues, they will be tested. But some of their skill players,
about?
Deontay Harris and Juwan Johnson, making the plays. Like, they got to do it. They got to stack weeks. But those guys look like real guys right now.
So if I had to,
and we didn't know that.
If I had to make a prediction on fool's gold in week one, I'm not on the Jameis Winston train yet. It was a 14 completions, 148 yards, 5 touchdowns against the Green Bay defense that was just couldn't get out of its own way. You give credit to Winston, but the whole thing with Winston especially is like when things are going well, he can roll. But when his team's trailing, if he makes a mistake and he starts pressing, that's when things snowball in his own way. And when he gets tested historically in his career, that's when the turnovers start piling up. So I need to see more from Winston before saying that I think their quarterback situation is settled, but everything else about the organization and the team and the coaching was so spot on that you have to give them a ton of respect. So maybe I don't trust them, but I do enjoy the Jameis Winston experience on balance. Here's my favorite post-game interview bite from week one.
You know, one thing my trainer, he told me, he said, what did he say? He just told us to be prepared.
You kind of need the video visual as well, which is he looks to the sky trying to think what that trainer said to him that stuck with him so much, and it just didn't come.
He covered it up. That was some like on-air, you know, skills being shown by Jameis, where he clearly didn't think of it. And he was just like, oh, he told us to be prepared. Let's keep moving.
And he's got the 2020 vision, but not everything is fully loaded at this point.
Right. Forget the LASIK. Like, first of all, the LASIK guy, whoever gave Jameis Winston his LASIK should be advertising that heavily. You know, I'm the
absolutely.
One who, I'm the one who did it.
But well, he may be waiting like Dan to see where this goes. I mean, you
well,
don't
no,
advertise you,
no, he
too
rolls
soon.
Out the campaign hardcore this week. And then he pulls it on Sunday and waits things out. And then based on the results, he could roll it back out again and even invest more in billboards and all that other stuff.
But the trainer should even go harder. I mean, maybe come up with a better slogan than be prepared. But Jameis Winston's body looks totally different. And his running ability in that game was as good as I've ever seen him and was a pretty key factor in that game. If you've got a Jameis who can scoot a little bit, that is something different that we did not see early on when he was, you know, pounding those crab legs.
True. I mean, he wasn't exactly Fat Albert before. He was able
but
to
he
move.
Wasn't, he couldn't. If you look at his rushing yards, especially his first three, four years, he couldn't do it. His legs picked him up some pretty good first downs here.
What percentage of listeners have never encountered any Fat Albert content?
Hey, I would. Hey.
Kind of a sneaky, underrated 80s cartoon, Fat Albert.
Right.
All right. Now, finally, what's the name of this site again? How about now? Green Bay Packers. How about now? And how about to talk about the Packers, we welcome on the beat reporter, the beat man for The Athletic, Matt Schneidman. Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast, Matt.
How are you guys doing? Really appreciate you having me.
Awesome, thanks for coming on.
It's nice to meet you. It's pretty rare that, like, I've never even seen your face. Any sort of man could have come onto our screen, and here he is. This
there you go. Appreciate it, guys.
We have no way to know whether this is the real Matt Schneidman.
You don't know.
But that would be weird if there was a fake Matt Schneidman that came on the show today. What we're talking about here, Matt, welcome to the show. It's dumb. What we're talking about here is teams after week one, does it change how we feel about them? And I feel like a guy like you who was boots on the ground, was there all through the spring and summer of Aaron Rodgers' nonsense, and then a training camp where things seemed to be back under control. And then what we saw Sunday, which was just a catastrophe organizationally, did it change how you feel about the team?
Mm.
Not drastically. I mean, all preseason, I heard them talk about their laser focus, their understanding of the magnitude of this season, given everything that went on with Rodgers this summer and everything that is likely to happen after this season. They know this could be his last season. And they all spoke about their potential and their expectations after two straight NFC Championship game losses. And Aaron Rodgers said it himself at that first his first press conference at training camp. One of the main reasons he came back is because he knows they have a Super Bowl caliber roster. That team that I watched in Jacksonville on Sunday looks like it does not belong in this league. Now, in 2019, they had a similar performance against the Chargers in LA, a losing Chargers team, and they lost 26-11. They got blown out in Tampa last regular season. So you have these kind of fluke games. I'll be more concerned if I'm the Packers if it happens on Monday night against Detroit, then they have a trip to the 49ers and then the Steelers at home after that. So anomaly for now, if it happens again, a concern. If it happens a third time, a trend. Doesn't really change the way I view them as a whole. Maybe just gives me a couple more reservations about what they're really made of this year.
You know, one question I have for you, though, because I saw this from you on Twitter, and you noted this quote from Aaron Rodgers after the game, that he said, we probably felt like we were going to go up and down the field on whoever they had out there. So there was a sense of overconfidence. And your line above that, pitching your article, was, on Sunday, they, the Packers, seemed full of themselves, in fact, according to the QB. And you also mentioned on your pod that
we applaud good writing.
No, that caught my eye because I thought that was a deserving slight to a Packers team that came out a little bit too excited about themselves. You also mentioned on your pod that they had 27 guys, according to Matt LaFleur, who were potential team leader type you know, elements in the locker room. So that tells you it is a veteran heavy, leadership heavy room. When I look at what happened on Sunday, how does that happen to a Packers team with Aaron Rodgers, with consistency at the head coach level, and that much leadership on the roster?
That's a fantastic question, and it's something I've been trying to figure out. You know, the reason I wrote that is because just last week, Devontae Adams was at a podium inside Lambeau Field and said, this is one of the this is the hungriest team I've been around in my 8 years with the Packers. So I thought it might have been a little too corny, but I kind of played off it. Nailed because it. Aaron Rodgers was straight up asked, were you guys too full of yourselves? And he said, yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. Now, what I don't get is, how is that possible? Aaron Rodgers, you have, you know, Aaron Jones, Robert Tonyan, Devontae Adams, all 11 starters on defense were here last year. The only new starters on the team, per se, are rookie center Josh Myers and rookie right guard Royce Newman. Like, the guys you have know that a game like that is possible at any minute. How do you let everyone on the team, including yourselves, let your guard down? As you mentioned, Matt LaFleur essentially boasted to us last week when we were talking about captains that he had 27 players receive a captain's vote, and 10 of those guys received double-digit votes. In his 2 years here, he's only named one captain for each unit. So it's been Aaron Rodgers, Za'Darius Smith, who was not named a captain this year, and Mason Crosby for special teams. This year, they had so many guys get captain's votes that they named three for offense, Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, Mercedes Lewis, three for defense, Adrian Amos, Jair Alexander, Kenny Clark, and then Crosby for special teams. Aside from Elgton Jenkins, their 25-year-old left tackle, who had two tackles on Sunday because he tackled the guy who intercepted Aaron Rodgers both times.
It's amazing. Time of game.
There was nobody's example worth following. There was nobody who looked like a leader out there. And football-wise, there was a lot that went wrong, but the intangibles of that energy, that leadership, Matt LaFleur said the Saints wanted it more. How does that happen to the Green Bay Packers? It's a great question.
Did you point out that Mark's question was fantastic and great? You know, you did it twice because he said he listened to your podcast.
That might have been a little bit of it.
We're
allies. We're now allies. I mean, that's how this business works. So.
you mentioned Za'Darius Smith. That was my take. Like, Rodgers' timing seemed off. You know, I don't think that's going to be a long-term problem. I think they were playing a team that it was like a playoff game to them. They knew what that game was going to mean, not just in week one to the city of New Orleans, but forever. Like, fans in New Orleans will remember that game forever. And I think that they were playing for a higher purpose. And so that helps explain it. I'm more curious because you've been there and we haven't had a lot of Joe Barry talk this offseason. And Za'Darius Smith, you know, isn't 100% and is probably the key player. And you mentioned he's not a captain right now. There's been some behind the scenes stuff with him. Give me a little feel of like stuff we don't know about their defense, because the defense to me was a bigger concern, you know, just watching that game, because I just assume Aaron Rodgers and the offense will get it together eventually.
Yeah, I'll mention one thing about Za'Darius Smith first. He only practiced, I believe it was four times all preseason, because he had a back injury that landed him on the NFI list when camp started. So we still don't know how it happened before he came to camp. And then he practiced the week they had the Jets here for joint practices, practice very limited, and then it flared back up again. And I don't know how much that had to do with him not being named a captain, but immediately after the team tweeted out the captain, Za'Darius Smith tweeted, wow, with the emoji of him, the thinking emoji.
Well, there was like some contract stuff too. So that's interesting, because he is their best, you know, him and Alexander.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Za'Darius Smith was a second team all pro last year. And he has told me that he wants to be a Packer for the rest of his career. It's no secret. He wants an extension. And I want to show you this. I'm grabbing my phone because he deleted this off his Instagram story, but this was tweeted this was tweeted out. I don't know if you can see this.
This is real beat reporter stuff right
but
here.
He
I love
tweeted
it.
That he's getting a tattoo. Okay. That's his Instagram story that has since been deleted. So new piece on the way. He's getting a tattoo of a captain's chain.
Oh, he's annoyed.
So
this captain thing is a pretty big deal.
He's not happy about that. And, you know, it's since deleted.
I like this.
I have no reason to believe that that's fake, but it would go along with his frustration that would seem to be what that tweet was about. The defense as a whole, it's tricky because I watched the game back, and there were so many communication issues. Twice I saw Channon Sullivan in their nickel corner when they were in zone point, and I'm pointing to my left, for someone else to take a guy that was cutting across the field. Marquez Callaway on the second play from scrimmage of the game, nobody took him, resulted in a 14-yard gain. And then Chris Hogan on a touchdown that I believe made it 31-3, Darnell Savage Jr. and Devondre Campbell, their new veteran inside linebacker, kind of just caught no man's land, and Sullivan is left chasing after a guy who played in a Premier Lacrosse League game 3 months ago. Now, I know he's a proven NFL wide receiver, but as I said, all these guys, with the exception of Campbell, since he's new, but he's been in this league, those communication issues should not be happening against guys that have been on this defense together for the last 3 years. I don't care who the coordinator is. You know, it's tough to really tell how much of Joe Barry's influence is part of that 38-3 defeat, but all we hear from players every single time they talk about Joe Barry is, oh, he has energy, he's a great guy. I don't care how much energy he has. If you're giving up 38 points 49 minutes into your debut as defensive coordinator, that's not good. And his defenses in Detroit and Washington, he was defensive coordinator in Detroit 07-08, in Washington in 15-16. With the exception of Washington's 15 defense, they were, you know, middle of the pack. His other three defenses were the worst or second worst in the league. This is the guy who was the DC when the Lions went 0-16. But
what a resume.
Yeah, but Matt LaFleur just loves
Schneidman takes down Barry in a big spot. Barry, hope he doesn't listen to this podcast.
Well, I apologize for rambling, but you know, Matt LaFleur was in love with the fact that Joe Barry has been on Sean McVay's staff the past couple of years and was under Brandon Staley on that defensive staff last year in LA when Barry was the linebackers coach. He wants to bring that, you know, two shell, keep everything in front of you, don't allow the explosive play style that frustrated LaFleur so much when they were preparing for the Rams in the playoffs last year that he said, you know what, I want some of that on my team.
You know what they should do, by the way, Matt, if they really want to get back at overreactionary Packers fans, just bring back Dom Capers.
Like, Dom Capers' like defense. Guy? Dom Capers' defense didn't give up 38 points till his seventh game as defensive coordinator. Ooh,
wow, look at that, Paul. He did win a Super Bowl, Dom.
He did.
You know, we remember that. I remember that was fun.
So did Mike McCarthy. You know, all right. Listen, Matt. Before we let you go, and I know there's a national fascination with Aaron Rodgers, you know, pop psychology, and it's probably super annoying, but you know, he's an interesting guy, and I'm just curious, somebody that's there. Because I'm watching this guy ever since he's emerged from Hawaii or wherever he was. I think it was Hawaii. And he's got the weird hair and he's dressing different. He's playing a guitar. Like, is he entering like the eccentric intellectual millionaire portion of his life? And if that's so, can you also marry that with being a professional quarterback of great skill?
I certainly think so. Now, this is only my third year covering him, but in the past couple of years, he's seemed to take more of an outside football approach. In whether it's with us or when he goes on Pat McAfee's show every Tuesday, talking about things that he's doing to better himself outside football. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. His mental health, all that stuff, I'm totally for that. I don't think that has anything to do with football. If anything, it is better because he talks so much about headspace and being in a good headspace after everything that's gone on the past couple of years, drafting Jordan Love this offseason. It's important to have good mental health and be in a good headspace. A normal person like myself would probably get my underwear in a bunch about all that stuff. But while he has certainly at times, I don't think it's affected his play on the field. Now, I see these wild conspiracy theorists out there saying he only came back because he wants to sabotage the team from the inside. Mm. I would love that because that would be fantastic theater to cover as a reporter. Great. But
that was Greg's theory, by the way. But
I don't think there's really any correlation. He certainly does seem to be entering that phase of his life. Maybe it's because he's engaged now and Shailene Woodley is having an effect on him. Again, I'm not saying that's bad, but maybe this is a little bit of a different Aaron Rodgers than people are used to. That may not sit well with them, but whatever floats his boat, as long as he keeps playing not like he did on Sunday, I think all will be well in Green Bay. And that starts with Detroit on Monday night.
And you're a Syracuse man.
I am.
So you know journalism. You were trained in the best place to get that education. Mm. And you know you do not root for teams. You don't root for players. You root for stories. And what would be a better story than Aaron Rodgers trying to implode the Packers from the inside?
I don't know. That would get pretty dark. Yeah, we won't cut that little portion and send it out to all the Packers listeners. You saying that's like, I'd love for this team to implode.
Hey, I said on Sunday, the way Sunday happened was better for my job than if they had won 30-24. I mean, wow.
100%.
I know people hate hearing that and say, how can you listen? A team that wins a lot and goes to the NFC Championship game is great. You always want your team to be relevant. I covered the Raiders for 2 years before this, and that was relevant for all the wrong reasons. Sunday was relevant for the wrong reason, and
it's part
and
of the story.
It's great to cover.
I mean, you were here because they took a dirt nap, so that you're right. Absolutely right.
Yeah, you're blowing up.
Matt Schneidman, and he's our Tuesday guest. We don't want Rodgers. McAfee, the punter, could have that guy. We want Schneidman. So follow him on The Athletic. Check out his podcast, Head of the Pack. And yes, follow him on Twitter at Matt Schneidman. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks Matt. Guys. Really appreciate it.
It's fun.
All right. There he goes. Good guest. Put him in the dossier, Ricky.
Absolutely. If anyone comes on and says literally anything nice about anything that I say at all, they will be an eternal guest of the show.
It is nice, though. Because I knew as soon as you said that was a brilliant question, I said something like that. Very complimentary. I said, all right, two things. We set up our guest well here. And two, Mark's going to have a good day. Like that's going to stick with Mark for the rest of the day as he goes on post-podcast. And that's
well, my job here is done. I mean, I'll stay on screen and do all that stuff, but I don't need to say anything else.
All right, you don't. You know why? Because we're going to do a Thursday night football preview and we're going to start a new tradition here. Look at this beauty.
Boom, bang, bang. What's up, everybody?
Connie, this is, you are a little too done up for our taste.
Usually I know.
We get the dressed down, Connie. This is the bombshell. What's going on right now?
Let me explain, because this only happens when I have to do it. But I had to do I basically lined up my day for all of my interviews and anything I had to do on camera is today. So then that
Hello,
means
Dolly.
All the other days I can just be lazy and not do it. So, hey, did my hair, put on makeup, what's up? This is the right medium for it, right?
Colleen, are you prepared to offer the analysis, at least the match of the analysis that you offered to last week's Thursday night game, which I found, startling?
I don't know if I can live up to all of the greatness from last week, but I'm going to really try.
Okay.
Do the recap. Like, yeah, you don't have the look of terror in your eyes that we might call on you. Please, no. Don't go to me. I wasn't going to go to you. Please, no. Don't.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. But the anxiety was, because I wasn't like totally locked into the game. Listen, but yeah,
to say the least.
I think it was clear for all of us. You weren't
new week,
alone,
new me.
Totally.
I'm ready to go. I was like really milking my off season every second that I could. But now the summer of Connie is officially closed. So
oh, yeah, you're hitting. You must be getting on a plane. Yeah, you're getting on a plane, right? You're going to this game, right?
Tomorrow,
the circus
I am.
Shuttered. Connie Fox gets on a plane. She heads to D.C., where the Washington football team will welcome the New York Giants. Both teams coming off losses in week one, and Washington lost more than the game. They lost their quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, which, let's face it, we just had Matt Schneidman on, and if you're a broadcaster or a journo, you're rooting for the story, and Connie obviously rooting for Fitzmagic to be up on the dais at the end of the game because he's always so much fun. You won't have Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I'll tell you what, Connie, we'll start here as the Tyler Heinicke era begins. We might not see Ryan Fitzpatrick at all. I watched NFL Network yesterday, and Ian Rapoport said it's on the table. It's not off the table, he said, that Fitzpatrick is done for the season. So this is Heinicke's show for now against a Giants team that desperately needs a W here, coming off a very disappointing week one performance themselves.
I really hate this for Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I hate it even more for me because I really love doing Thursday night football when Ryan Fitzpatrick is the quarterback. It truly is. And that is something that I was really looking forward to. It's obviously not going to happen, but Taylor Heinicke actually was not bad in relief of Fitzy. He came in, he only missed on four passes, and when you think back to last year when the Washington team played the Bucks in the wild card game, Heinicke was pretty good in that game against the Bucks. So he definitely can make plays. He's athletic. He has some mobility too. So there's some similarities with Fitzy because he did scramble on a couple of plays as well. And I think it's kind of remarkable that he's a former undrafted free agent and this is his fifth team. And now based on what you just said and what Ian Rappaport had said, like he might be starting the whole season if that is the case, if Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't coming back. But I think that this team has some good chances with Logan Thomas at tight end. He should get some more opportunities because you saw what the Broncos were able to do against this Giants defense. Noah Fant, Albert O, they both put up some nice numbers, had some nice plays. But if Antonio Gibson didn't fumble the ball last week, I think Washington had a really good chance of winning. So I like this team a lot. The Giants, they have a lot more issues.
Yeah. By the way, did I go into them? I heard the name. I was just seeing if Mark wanted to jump in. I heard all last week during that game, the announcer saying Albert O's last name in a certain sort of way, which is the opposite of what, you know, which is totally different. On the Broncos website, it says Okui Bunim. So that's what I've been going with. That crazy to say Okui Bunim, but they went with a totally different way to say it. And now I don't know what's
they say
right.
It.
They said like Okui Bunim or something like that. I think he mangled it, but that is part of the Giants defense that I'm concerned with. Like almost everything from that Giants game concerned me. I thought they had one of the worst week ones of any team, and they got to win. I mean, these two teams both came out of week one, I feel like, looking a little worse than their ceiling we're hoping for going into the season. Cause I thought this was going to be one of the more fun Washington teams to watch in a while, but now we don't have Fitz. I know Heinicke's kind of like junior Fitz, you know, with that, you know, track record being undrafted. Fitz was a seventh round pick, you know, bouncing around to a bunch of teams, kind of being a freewheeling guy. Like, that's great, but you don't have him. You still don't have Curtis Samuel. Adam Humphries wasn't exactly an exciting pickup, but you thought like the connection with Fitz was going to be something. So maybe you don't get the total Humphries experience. And their tackles were terrible last week. The Chargers were eating all game. They're starting a rookie at right tackle, Sam Cosmi, who was a little lost, and then a veteran, Charles Leno. And so you think of the Giants as the team with a bad offensive line, and they probably are, but the Washington football team could be too. And we could be looking at a whole lot of defense on Thursday night. That's what I'm feeling.
Here's the spin, Connie, for you lose Ryan Fitzpatrick, but Saquon Barkley now a week removed from the idea that he's going to see limited snaps. Now, a short week doesn't help things. I don't think Saquon's going to be the bell cow either, but the Giants are in an interesting position here. It's because you want to bring back your best offensive player in a safe, smart way, but you also got to win some ball games here. And you know, Daniel Jones, the more you put in his hands, the greater the chance that he lets it get away. So you need Saquon to have a role and make a difference. And you need that defense, which is the reason they stayed in the division race last year, to make the type of impact plays that they made last year, because they weren't happening against Denver.
Well, this is like not exactly a gauntlet of a division either. So at this point, it's not, you know, you wouldn't be panicking to start 0-2. It's not great. Nobody wants to do it. It seems like the Giants do it every single year, but
they've done it seven out of 8 years. That is a shocking stat.
Isn't that kind of crazy? But I also think too, for Daniel Jones, like he's in a tough position because most of their top, like three of their top skill position players are not really 100%. Like Saquon's not 100% yet, and they're trying to ease him back, but he only rushed for 26 yards in that game. Kenny Golladay, he's coming off the hamstring injury. He doesn't look 100% either. And then Evan Engram, he was out for the opener, and they're hoping that they can get him in for this. But Joe Judge said today that he's been doing more work. He's making a lot of jumps. They're hoping that he can start on Thursday, but otherwise, you have Kyle Rudolph getting most of the work out there. So really, it's just Sterling Shepard who stood out in that game. And then Daniel Jones, he has the fumble. That doesn't help anything. It's his 30th career fumble. It's 40th career turnover. The only thing I will say that I liked about the Giants is the fact that their offensive line played a little bit better than I thought they would. I feel like that was a major sticking point for them last year. They didn't really address it in the offseason or in the draft, but they looked okay. And their left tackle, Andrew Thomas, is one player that really gets a lot of heat. He did not look good his rookie season. He did not look good in the preseason, and he actually played okay last week.
Yeah, he actually got his highest pass blocking grade of his career, which I'm not saying that's a feat beyond feats because there weren't a lot of high grades to begin with, but the other thing, the positive I would point out for the Giants, too, is I think they're a team built to stop the run. That's a very Dave Gettleman-esque scenario. But Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams, Austin Jackson, I mean, these guys, you know, they're like dudes that are eating like giant plates of like fish and ox meat every day. They're beefy. It's a big line. And like maybe if you're Antonio, I think Antonio Gibson looked great to me last week. Like if you can shut him down, if you can cause a turnover in the run game, I think this game will be close. As for Heinicke, I kind of super enjoy watching him. So I hear you on Fitzy, and especially from having him come sit up with you.
When did he just become Fitzy? Game. Now he's just Fitzy.
New.
That's like
here?
This.
I think it's
been
said
on this podcast over and over, and I don't know if I've heard
that. But I got the jam. I have to call him Fitzpatrick. I have to say the whole
Fitz
name.
Magic.
So syllables.
Ryan.
Well, Thomas the magic Reifel. Is not happening when you're on, you he know, you're undergoing Harvard. The knife. So
Heineke's got a lot of Fitzpatrick. Yeah, he's got a lot of Fitzpatrick, too. Dan, I know you're excited about that. The fangs are coming out in New York for Jason Garrett. I think it's like the media like held off one game. And now them and the fans are kind of like, who, like, this is not what we need, Jason Garrett.
Well, you know, the Garrett haters, they're strong. I've never been as anti-Garrett as you are and others. But listen, when Daniel Jones is your quarterback and Saquon blows out his knee like 3 weeks into your first year on the job, I don't know who's going to fix that offense. But yeah, they probably could go with more fresh thinking if this doesn't work out. Let's pick the game, and then we have a big announcement to make. Connie.
Oh, wow.
Whoa. Okay, I think Washington's the better team. They're at home. It's on a short week. So are we doing scores too?
Sure.
Washington 21-14.
Ooh, wow. Washington's favored by 3.5 in this game. So I'm going to try to thread the needle here. Washington gets the win, but it's just like a 1.17-16 defensive slugfest. And I'm also going to predict Chase Young is the man on the podium after the game with Connie.
What about the set, rather. Connie,
what
can you promise me? Okay. Can you promise me one thing, Connie?
Yes.
If the Reds, if the Washington football team rolls, and Montez Sweat and Chase Young kick ass.
Young and Sweaty!
And you get them up on the dais. Will you introduce them as Young and Sweaty? Promise me that. Because that's what we need.
Or introduce it as a possible thing. Giving Dan the credit.
I will come through. And if they're on the show post game, I will get in a Young and Sweaty reference.
What if it's just one of them? Do you get out of it, or can you introduce the Young and Sweaty nickname? If it's only half of them, if it's Young, because Young is the more likely one.
In a column today, I actually mentioned Young and Sweaty, but right after it said that it was a catchphrase that is in process, cooked up by Dan Hansis. Are you going to drop Young and Sweaty, Colleen, but not also mention its creator? That would be blasphemous.
Don't need it. That's okay.
Oh, no. Don't worry. Dan will be mentioned. If I'm mentioning Young and Sweaty, I'm not mentioning Dan Hansis.
Well, twist my arm. Good idea. Mark, your pick.
I picked it for the site, and I don't remember what I picked, but I'm going to go with I picked Washington. I just remember the score. 26-17, and I think Chase Young has 3.5 sacks in this game.
All right, and I'll pick the Giants here just because the NFC East is weird. And I just kind of have a feeling that Giants defense that we were just talking about didn't really show up last week, shows up and confuses the young Heinicke. Let's call it 21-10. G-Men!
Swept them last year. The Giants won both those games last year.
Close games.
Joe Judge has their number. All right, Connie, stick around here. Big announcement.
Okay.
The Around the NFL podcast is proud to announce that for the third time, we will be going to London. How about that? The ATN podcast is off to London.
Woo!
Next month, less than a month from now. And just a little cherry on top for the old Zeuser, it will be for the Week 5 matchup between the Atlanta Falcons and the New York Jets. The boy who will lead them in the land of the Queen. This is going to be great.
I'm so jealous. That sounds
right.
Like
I know,
so
I didn't
much
know if
fun.
Connie was hoping to hear like a second part, and it's like second part where it's like, "And you're coming with us."
No. Yeah, sorry, we didn't get a ticket for you.
Wait, Connie, you do have like 8 trillion frequent flyer miles because of your job, right?
Can
you join us? Because
she does have a job, though. Yeah,
I know, but come on, the fans out there who have always been so incredibly kind to us in the UK, it's been a lifeblood of this podcast, and we love you, and we can't wait to be out there with you. We're gonna try to cook up some stuff to interface with the fan base.
But if interface
we would like to interface with humans,
interface with other humanoids.
What are we doing? Like a Reddit? Ask me anything.
But imagine tiny boxes with us. I mean,
I would love to go. London is one of my favorite places. I did an ATN meetup there one time without you guys. It was so much fun. But I have to do the pregame show that day for that game. So I'll be
in studio. I mean, Connie,
but wouldn't
that
be a great place to do it? At the game?
I know.
No,
I
it
agree.
Wouldn't, first of all. But like you know that we'd cook you into about 14 hours of extra work and planning that you weren't preparing for. I will note one thing. For the second time in a row, it will, and this doesn't matter to anyone, but like it will actually be my birthday while there. So I continue to build on life experiences that are not shared with my actual nuclear family, but yet with you guys.
Hey, football is family, Mark.
That's what they're telling me. It's not always.
I mean, I like that you're positioning this as if it's something you're so, you know, strongly upset about.
I'm not upset. It's just a fact. Well, no, I'm shifting into the mode where like a single woman in her late 30s, you celebrate your birthday for like a full month with like 18 to 19 events. So.
Well, you heard that, England. If you guys have the time, it's less than 4 weeks, but start those celebration plans for Mark Sessler because he is coming to town. All right. That's great. How fun is that? Well, how lucky are we?
I love that.
We'll send out more info. Yeah, on all this stuff. Hopefully we'll have a nice show. We'll do lots of things, hopefully.
And a special preemptive thank you to Henry Hodson, the Vice President of International, all the people over at the NFL UK office, Nick Pike and the whole gang, and also Sky Sports, who we've had a great relationship with for years. We are not going back over there, if not for all of those people and those departments. So thank you to everybody. We will interface with you as well when the time comes.
Yeah.
0800 hours.
And we didn't say it, but we're back on Sky Sports. You can watch that in the UK, but you can watch that all over the world. If you get your Sky Sports NFL package, we'll be doing hits throughout every Sunday. Little, you know, commercial
breaks. Man, just endless self-promotion. Endless. Well, it's endless. Look at me content.
They just made it to hour 15, you know, 1:15 of this show. They might be curious. They might want to.
Or they might have had more than enough. I mean, I'm just saying that there are different types of people out there. So,
and
do you guys
want to
plug your
side
pods?
Well, we do that often. Yeah.
Maybe I should get Bob out there in England. We'll do a remote throwback podcast.
Isn't Bob a little
London?
I thought Bob was anti ATN podcast at the moment. Is he shifted off that?
I don't know. He's a little salty about my promotional efforts. I'm not like Greg, who's like JRVP every second.
Oh yeah, that's right. People
eating up precious moments of the show, talking about his other show. I mean, Greg. I'm glad you did.
How precious is it? How precious are these moments?
I don't know.
Really,
I'm sorry,
78.
This.
Yeah.
All right. And Ricky, you're excited for London too, I imagine.
Oh, I'm so excited. We've been going back and forth with the UK office, and there's a lot of planning to do, which I'm so excited about, but I can't believe we're getting back over. It's just going to be
on
the
your
four
plate
of
there,
us.
Hollywood.
Yes. Ton.
Are you
Ricky, we can hang out when I'm there, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
How's your podcast going? Is that off the ground yet? The old Split Ends pod with
Split
Ricky
Ends?
And Connie?
Split Ends. That's coming out in a couple of weeks. I think our launch date is October 4th.
Ooh,
is it?
It's October 5th.
I bet our podcast gets to China before that podcast begins.
Well, we'll see. We've got iHeartRadio behind it, so we'll see what happens. But
right. What could go wrong?
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thank you, Connie. Check out Thursday Night Football, of course, NFL Network, and Connie is anchoring that coverage. Pre, halftime, post. She's a stud. All right.
Oh,
we'll
yeah.
be back on Thursday with our Week 2 preview podcast. And, of course, Friday, NFL Network, the true Around the NFL show where we dig in on all 32 teams. And, yes, we're on to London in less than 4 weeks to watch the Jets.
So
life is filled with ups and downs, but on balance, it's good.
That's a winnable game, Danny. That's a winnable mm-hmm. game. I'm making the Jets the favorite right now. Here we
Keep it calm.
Get enough football? Then look no further than the GMFB podcast. Join me, Kay Adams, alongside Nate Burleson, Peter Schrager, and Kyle Brandt for a daily breakdown of the league's biggest stories.
Between game plan breakdowns and fantasy tips, we've got you covered for all your football needs.
We got recaps, retweets, and reaction to all the wild moments you might have missed on and off the field.
Listen to the Good Morning Football podcast weekdays on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.